Hey, everybody. Before we begin the episode today, I wanted to let you know of a few things. One, I'm still open to new opportunities. So if you or your company needs someone to come in and help with any Swift development, BrightDigit is available. Reach out to me, leo@brightdigit.com, or you can go to the website, brightdigit.com, to get more details. Let's set up a time to talk and see how I can help you or your team with whatever project they're working on. Yeah. Just let me know, and I would love to help in any way I can. Secondly, I'll be speaking at SwiftCraft. This will be in May. Dates, you can check that out here and on the website. And I will be speaking on learning how to count and being an advanced Swift programmer. So I'll go over some stuff about the history of numbers and mathematics and how it's related to the evolution and complexities of Swift. So I would love to see you there. If you're going to be in the UK, in Kent, come check it out. And then I have been doing a live stream every Tuesday and Thursday at 9 a.m. And I'm hoping to continue to do that as well for the foreseeable future. I've been doing stuff with Bushel and with a new app that I'm working on that I will be revealing soon. So if you are interested in learning what is coming down the line, you can definitely want to check out my live stream. It's on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/brightdigit. It's also on LinkedIn and on Twitter as well. If you like in those live streams and want to test some of these features out, I'm still looking for beta testers for Bushel, and I'd love for you to join and get an exciting look at what you can do in Bushel. So definitely check that out. And lastly, we still have our Patreon. So if you want to get early access to episodes like this, or you want to get access to upcoming articles and drafts and a little bit of the feedback I've been getting from folks, super helpful, reach out to me and let me know. That's about it. So thank you again for joining me for this episode, and I hope you enjoy the rest of it. Bye. Welcome to another episode of Empower Apps. I'm your host, Leo Dion. Today, I'm joined by Paul Hudson. Paul, thank you so much for joining me today.
My pleasure.
It's been, I want to say, 3 years since you've been on. I think
since the pandemic, time's a concept. No one really gets time anymore.
I think it was like right before the pandemic I had you on. So yeah, it's like a million years in real life. But for those who don't know who you are, I'll let you go ahead and introduce yourself.
So folks, my name is Paul. I run the site Hacking with Swift. I work on various open source projects. Recently, that's been the Inferno project, which is a collection of open source metal shaders for SwiftUI developers. Then I released Vortex, which is a high-performance special effect library creating particle effects for, again, SwiftUI developers. I've also built Control Room, Sitrep, Unwrap, and a whole bunch more. Open source is really deep in my blood.
Nice, nice. So today you wanted to talk, when we talked beforehand, you said you wanted to talk about Swift on the server and result builders. And then a few days ago, you released a certain project that is heavily involved in that. Do you want to explain what that is?
It's like I planned ahead. It's like I planned ahead somehow, right? Yeah, because you offered a range of dates for the podcast. And I'm planning on this new thing, working to this new project. And I released it at TriSwift Tokyo last week. So today we're recording this on, I think, Wednesday, end of March. And I released it Friday in Tokyo. So it's brand new. And I've been working on it for a while, on and off. And it's been percolating through my brain. And I thought, you want to talk interesting and new? Here, this is definitely very new and definitely very interesting because it's all in my head right now, which is great. And I'm finally glad to release it to the world. And this new project is called Ignite. Someone asked me how I think up names for my project. And like, it's pretty pathetic. It's got, imagine a 5-year-old boy who thinks, what words sound cool? Ignite, Inferno, Vortex. Yeah, it's basically more how it works. And so I want to keep the fire themed name, so a bit of confusion in people's brains a little bit. And I've released Ignite, but it's not anything like the previous Metal Haters thing. This thing is a static site generator built with Swift.
That is awesome. We were speaking before the show, and I was like, yeah, I've used Publish before to build the BrightDigit website. So I'm familiar with Sundell's set of libraries there. What's the different approach that you took with Ignite that is different than Publish, for those who know what Publish is?
For those who don't know what publishers or other things like Tokamak out there, for example, or Ignite at all, let's start with what the idea is. Do you want to build your website in Swift? And that's the first question, because you obviously use HTML, you can use CSS, you can use JavaScript right now and build, of course, world-leading websites. Most websites in the world built this stuff, right? What these tools allow you to do is use your Swift skills to build websites. And this means you can avoid some of the complexities around HTML and CSS. For example, making mistakes in HTML is fairly easy because it's just a whole bunch of strings. Mess a tag off and like an end of a H2, something everything's a heading to, whatever. It's possible because it's just string-based. There's no compiler checking your code for you. That's in there. But also in the CSS land, things are complicated. You've got to think about things like, are we in light mode or dark mode? Are we in limited space or lots of space with media queries and similar?
Yeah.
It's complex. And my pitch is that most folks don't have enough time to be a really great Swift developer and a really great web developer. And so there are tools out there. You've mentioned Publish already. Publish uses, it's a whole bunch of stuff from John. It's Ink.
Yeah, you got Ink, you got Plot, you got, it's built on top of a lot of stuff.
You got Ink, Plot, Splash, Publish. Ultimately, you write Swift code that generates your HTML. The approach John took is different from the approach I've taken. I've aimed for, to answer the question, what if Swift UI were that style where to let you write websites?
Yes.
And I don't mean Swift UI code, but Tokamak is a project, a brilliant open source project, which takes Swift UI code, direct current Swift UI code, and turns into web pages that exists already.
Mm-hmm.
I have not taken that approach. I've said, when we make a list in Swift UI, we say list 1 to up to 100, show text of $0, whatever. And that works great. And we don't have to say, listen, what I want is a large white box with a sort of black translucent capsule on one side that moves around, and then row dividers automatically, and then indent these things here, and we scroll, it scrolls, and tap and it activates it. We don't have to say all that stuff. We just say list, and things happen.
Yep.
And what John's approach is more about encoding HTML in Swift.
Yes.
So you still say, give me a H2, give me a paragraph, give me a div, give me an IMG, give me an LI, get it. I said, okay, can we rethink this in terms of Swift UI? Can I have a carousel, please? And you say carousel with slide 1, 2, 3. And I've got a swiping, scrolling, animating little pitch you can swipe through, just like Swift UI works, like a tab view works. Give me an accordion so you can see a title, tap to unfold, things appear below. So it gives you a much higher level, rich collection of controls built for the web and built to be responsive for mobile devices out of the box. So desktop, mobile, iPad, it adapts flawlessly with the high-level controls and gives you things like the ARIA ARIA standard, the rich accessibility library framework out there already to make sure your controls work great with screen readers. And so you don't have to be a great web developer to make good, solid, usable websites now with Swift. It's doing a lot of the heavy lifting for you. That's my pitch with Ignite.
I love that. I know with Publish, when I built the website, I did that. I did like H1s, H2s, all that stuff. And then I think shortly after I built the website for Bright Digit, I noticed that John added an API called Components, which uses result builders. And I was like, dang, like now I'm like, I wish I had done that approach. And it sounds like you're like totally taking that approach and I love it. Make the pitch, I guess, for why result builders, and I think that's what you're getting at here, is a better way of doing things as opposed to just slapping an array together.
So result builders let you have effectively a DSL, right? Domain specific language inside your Swift code. So you're looking at some code, and let's face it, if you were to wind back 6 years, 7 years and show folks Swift UI, it'd be alien.
Right.
And it is alien, right? Swift UI code looks nothing like Swift code because it has a mission of returns. There's no return in there at all. Everything's a trailing enclosure, if not multiple trailing enclosures. Then we have the result builders kicking in and turning things into arrays of stuff behind the scenes or tuple views in Swift UI it is, but stuff being converted automatically for you behind the scenes. And so you're doing lots and lots of work behind the scenes. Lots of Swift heavy lifting happens to make Swift UI look like it does. As a result, you look at your UI code and all its structure. Like, we've had this argument for a while. Someone, I don't remember who it was, posted an article on the lines of Swift UI, the one true architecture is called MV, Model View Architecture. I don't know who it was, and I don't get into that too much. But and it's interesting because I disagree entirely. I look at, I don't talk about this very much, I don't get into the fight, to be honest with you, but I look at Swift UI itself, and I think, which part of MVC, Model View Controller, does Swift UI code sit in?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's not Vue. Even though it's a Vue protocol, it's not Vue code. I'm looking at my Swift UI code, and what I see is a bunch of descriptions of stuff.
Yeah.
No matter what code you write, any Swift UI code you write, you cannot put a single pixel on the screen. You just can't. You describe, I want a list, I want a tab view, whatever. But what does tab view mean? Like on watchOS, it's a scrolling horizontal list of things, the page notes at the bottom. On macOS, it's a control group with buttons across the top. On tvOS, it's segmented control. On iOS, it's a tab bar across the bottom. On visionOS, it's on the left. They all adapt automatically. It's basically a model. We're describing our layout as pure structure and something else, the actual view layer, UI kit, app kit, whatever, renders that out to the screen. And so my idea is that with result builders, we look at model data purely, very nicely. And that's what Ignite does for you. You see your page structure at a very high level and the logic is somewhere else.
I think one of the things that you were in Chicago last year, but one of the things that really, really clicked with me was when I saw the presentation on Deck UI and how, like, it's such an ingenious way to express a value or a view in the case of Swift UI that makes it much more intuitive, I think, to a lot of developers. And that's where I see result builders really helpful. What I've done is I've created a whole way of describing a Swift package using result builders and things like that. And it's just great because it's just much more intuitive and much easier for you to build stuff without having to like create all sorts of imperative code, I guess, as far as how I see it.
Yeah. And actually, in my talk in TriSwift last week, which I'll probably list online soon enough, I talked about how we got to this point. Like, what was the route through evolution that took us to this point? Because result builders were announced after Swift UI. It's quite contentious. They had the What's New in Swift talk on Tuesday. And it was like, yeah, these result builders were yesterday.
They're new. I remember, like, Ted, the DSL stuff was announced beforehand. And I was like, okay, why are they announcing this?
No, that result, I was on the day.
Oh, DSL, okay.
On the day. Property wrappers were beforehand. Okay. Return types were beforehand. A whole bunch of things beforehand, and then that was afterwards, annoyingly.
Okay.
And so it's interesting that you look at evolution from around that period, and it's quite murky because clearly Apple are working on Swift UI stuff. They're working on Swift UI internally, and they're trying to make the language
ready,
be wrangled into a form that gets a good Swift UI result.
Right.
And you can see them try very hard. They release a whole bunch of proposals, some of which made it through, like property wrappers and
public
return types and blah. But other ones made it through and then weren't used. And I mentioned in my talk the static subscripts option.
Okay.
And so I give in my talk, I'm walking through, listen, we could do H2, and except I'm using their HTML at the time. It's pure H2, PBR, whatever. We really like in Swift, right? And with static subscripts, you could basically say a VStack and then an opening bracket. Like a square bracket, right? And then a whole bunch of views inside there, then a closing square bracket. And if you replace the square bracket with a brace, curly brackets, then you get Swift UI code. But you could do the same kind of thing using a static subscript with a square bracket. That was allowed. But you still had to have commas in there as well. You had to have comma between your views. And one of the proposals that was in evolution that got rejected was to remove commas around about the 5.1 era.
Okay.
Swift UI, so April time for Swift UI. If they removed the commas, it had been very close to Swift UI.
Right.
But obviously, that didn't happen. It got turned down as being too weird for the language.
So one of the things you mentioned is making the website responsive. Like, I'd like to know your philosophy as far as how are you adapting CSS so that your websites are always responsive? And is like, what kind of custom theming can you plug into your site using Ignite?
Yeah. So why... realized very quickly is that when you want to make a website, you want to have a whole bunch of standard components. Mm-hmm. Give me a navigation bar. In there, there's, I don't know, four menu items, then a drop down with a few other items in there, and a footer here, and general things you'd on lots of websites, right? And so I reached for the world's largest library of these things, Bootstrap.
Oh, okay.
And Bootstrap is a massive open source project, has been around for almost 15 years now. Yeah. It was, I think Twitter originally made it years ago, and now it's been just everyone using it for a long time now.
Right.
And so it builds on Bootstrap.
Okay.
And one thing I've been very upfront about with Ignite is I'm not trying to place HTML or be JavaScript free or whatever. I'm not in that territory. I think they're doing a great job as they are. Let's build on top of them. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see them as Swift developers. I want to, if you don't know CSS, fine. I'm not making you learn CSS. But you just say, there's a section here with A, B, and C inside. I'll show them on the screen and it will automatically snap to be a vertical section automatically when they make the browser smaller or if they're on an iPhone in portrait mode or whatever it is.
Yep.
It takes care of so much stuff for them. And of course, they can override it. They can say, no, you've got to be column width 4 no matter what, or I don't know, whatever. They can customize that if they want to. But broadly speaking, it does a good job out of the box.
Yeah.
Which is where I want to get to. Yeah. Navigation bars collapse into a logo and a little burger menu, which is a very website thing to do these days.
Right.
Automatically. It just happens for you. And it means devs haven't got to worry about, oh my God, how do I do media queries in this thing? And it is difficult. And I know it's difficult. And I don't want to do it either, quite frankly. Because we're here to write Swift code or iOS apps or macOS apps or whatever. And if you want to do a blog, cool. You want to share what you've learned with the world. But you don't have to learn this stuff. You don't have to learn how HTML really works and how JavaScript works, whatever. You don't really care. And so just the Ignite's goal is to try and bypass all of that and let you write just genuinely pure Swift code.
So I'm going to be a devil's advocate. When I had started my website for my company, I was afraid that by going with a Swift framework, I would spend all the time tinkering with it and not writing actual blog posts.
Yeah.
I know why I've decided to go with Swift, but what would be your argument for going with a Swift website builder while not being too distracted by it?
I know what you mean. Let me see now. 18 months ago, I was having dinner with Tunde Adegoroi, Tunsde, and he was saying he wants to launch his new website soon, and he's not sure what to do. Just WordPress, is he doing? Publish, is he doing, you know, HTML, CSS from scratch? Did it? And I was like, Tunde, no matter how good you might think you are at HTML, CSS or whatever, you aren't getting value from that. Like, you aren't here to teach the world how to build great websites. You will want to sell courses or link to your stuff or write blog posts or whatever. The value is in what you're creating already. The website's the vehicle for delivering the value you already have, not valuable in its own right, if that makes sense. And so my advice was, which he completely ignored, by the way, my advice was, if you're sitting around umming and ahhing about frameworks and this and that and the other, no, just use WordPress. Because the goal for you is get content out there
as quickly as
easily,
possible.
Smoothly. Correct. And as long as you aren't tied into some bizarre URL structure, if it's a simple flat URL system you can put anywhere, you can migrate to some other thing in the future. It works very well. Custom, whatever you want to. GitHub files. No one really cares how it's done. Somewhere else is easy. Just keep it a nice, clean URLs. And that's my advice to so many folks. The value for people is not in terms of getting a great custom site. It's just that getting what you have out there, because people care about your Swift code or your iOS apps or a portfolio you're trying to get hired for.
Yeah, exactly.
Or your blog posts you're sharing. That's the valuable stuff, not the amazing HTML you can write. And with Ignite, my hope is in very few lines of code, you can get the exact customizable site of your dreams. That's my goal. With beautiful cards or blog posts, with Markdown being read in and parsed to websites, it does lots of things for you very easily because it's a higher level components. I don't want to build UI kit for the web. As I'm saying, I built a Swift UI style thing. Web native. Think in terms of web controls, wrapping for mobile. Someone asked me, like, where's HStack? There's no HStack in Ignite. You have a section which makes a row of stuff, but it automatically wraps into new rows as content's restricted. as this page gets smaller and smaller, it wraps. And Haystack wouldn't do that. Haystack stays on one row forever, and that just doesn't work.
Right.
I'm not trying to build Swift UI for the web. I want to build a native web-first experience that happens to be built using Swift code. And so the goal is simplest possible thing to get a site up there already. Someone already launched a site in Ignite already. Like after 4 days, someone launched a site in Ignite, which is amazing.
Do you know who it is?
I hadn't met before.
Okay.
No, I've never met before in my entire life.
Okay.
They found it, downloaded the sample projects, modified it, published it straight away. And I love it. The speed people are able to work out to publish great things is huge. And I'm really behind that. And so it's obviously one step beyond WordPress. Like you can get simpler. You can say, I'll just use WordPress across the board and just use that. And that's fine. But then you're like, now I can't customize it at all. But I stick inside WordPress's boundaries, which is painful.
So for me, like, I just got burnt out maintaining a WordPress site and all the plugins and the mess with security and all that stuff. And that's why I ended up going with Publish. And then what I've been able to do with it and being able to take episodes like this and put it on the web page automatically whenever my podcast episode, I couldn't do that in PHP. Or I could, but I'm not. I don't want to. So like I've been able
to. You could, but you don't want to.
Exactly. Yeah. So like I have a whole bunch of tools that I've built now for my website in Swift where I can like put a podcast episode page up in Markdown automatically using Swift. And I could do all sorts of stuff with my newsletter and have that imported onto the website automatically. And that's been great. That's the stuff that I love. I was able to import the site from WordPress pretty easily. That worked out really well, and I have a library for that. So yeah, that's where I've seen the advantage with Swift. Isn't like it hasn't hurt my ability to write blog posts, let's put it that way. It's even made it easier for me to maintain and update it accordingly, and that's what I've really liked about moving to Swift.
Yeah, so as a Markdown, so I use Apple's own Swift Markdown library.
Yeah, nice.
For making it. And it's just so fast. It's absurdly fast. And really easy to use, that it can go through Markdown at blazing fast speed. So you can create thousands of pages from the system in a second. It's remarkable. And the same thing, actually, that Christian Selig used for Markdownosaur is attributed string parser for Markdown, which is great as well.
What was your favorite part working on this project as far as some feature that you learned about Swift that you didn't know before you got started?
Result models are really hard. And I make them look easy in my talk, and they are easy for small things. But you end up with just, like, the goal is Swift UI. Swift UI, what it creates is absolutely brilliant. And they've got a different set of problems to me. Because Ignite's a static site builder, it just outputs a bunch of HTML, right? Flat.
You don't have to deal with property wrappers or state management, right. Which is a big, that's the big hill you have to climb with Swift UI.
But also that there's no runtime performance.
Okay.
This isn't.
Yeah.
If I worked really hard, it might take a third of a second to run your program to build your whole website.
Yeah.
It's not a lot. It's so blazingly fast. Even in debug mode, it's absurdly fast. Whereas they have to think very carefully about performance at every step of the way.
Yeah.
And I don't. And so we've got a subset of problems that we'll deal with. But their implementation is the one to strive for. They've done such a good job. And I'd love to get closer. I think I will aim to get closer over time. I might grill them at Dublin this year. In fact, when I see them in June, like, how do you do this? How can I do this? Because they obviously know they're the experts in that particular thing. And so I'd love to get closer to it because it's not close enough just yet. But what I found is when you're in the groove and you're like, okay, let's add a drop-down button here and a carousel here and an accordion here and da-da-da, really rich components that look just great out of the box. And adapt flawlessly to your phone, it feels really good. And it captures that magic of Swift UI.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care how list works, or how form works, or how navigation split view works. I don't actually care. Behind the scenes could be thousands and thousands of lines of UI kit code, spaghetti code, horrible, whatever. I don't care. The result is I just see nice Swift UI result builders and then things just work. I love that. And the same is true in Ignite now.
Okay.
And I'd love to get more power in there to get more kinds of functionality out of the box.
So we got result builders. You already had a built-in Markdown tool. What else do you want to talk about Ignite specifically?
I think one of the fun things I did with Ignite was around documentation. So I wanted to document it to a very high level because I know it's a very hard choice to start with something new. And that's true in any framework, right? Any language. if there's not much documentation for it, it's a bit like, oh my God, where do I start? And with Ignite, I actually built a website for it. And it's the Ignite samples package. You can build and run it yourself, or it's actually made a subdomain for it on my site.
Okay.
And it shows you, it's a full site built with Ignite with image examples, text examples, grid examples, carousel examples, all there running. It's a real website running with the actual code, plus the code next to it. So you can say, okay, that's the one I want. Copy that across, use that.
Right. Nice. Click.
So it lets you see it, like it, steal it, use it in seconds. It was all built in Ignite as a way to help folks just get jump started very quick. Because it's horrible. You're like, I don't know what to do. Where do I start? Everything's blank. And I've still got more to do. I've still got a lot more to do in terms of documenting it to a level I'm very happy with. But the code is flawless to document. I went through every line of code, adding markdown comments and so forth, the best I possibly could, all the methods and cases and enum, But getting the online docs was critical to get folks jump started with example code to work with.
So this tutorial site is built in Ignite itself?
Yeah, it's all built in Ignite. So okay. The whole thing, you can, it's github.com/tustore/ignite samples is the code for the package.
Okay.
And you can build it locally, modify it locally if you want to, or on the web, if it is like Ignite samples, yeah, ignitesamples.hackingwithswift.com.
Okay.
Takes you straight to it. And you can basically see the badge examples, and that's the code, grab that, and then it shows you how it looks below. Every time it renders a HTML, I show you the code again. And you can see badges straight away. Badges are a lovely component. They look great. They're like the little text-colored boxes that you put over like your unread email account, for example, or cards right there. They just look really good and clean out of the box, which is really nice. And it makes it very easy to use.
Doxy, did you ever go that route and then was like, okay, no, I should just build a whole website. Or build the tutorial in Ignite instead.
It needs to be a place you can see the HTML running.
Okay. Makes total sense.
So that's the power of it. You can go to the alerts section, for example. That's it. It shows it's an example of the code, alerts, I'm getting really wrong, with a role of danger below is exactly how it looks. And you can see it and just say, that's what I want, that one there, and just swipe it instantly. And that's the power of it. You can see the code and see the result. That's it. Take it. And so it's very fast to get started with this stuff because it's right there to use again and again and again.
What do you find is the biggest part of friction that new people have adopting this tool? Did you get any friction as far as, I don't know how to do a Swift package. I just run Xcode, or I don't even know what a command line tool is and things like that.
Yeah, right? Oh, for sure. The hardest problem right now is just getting started. And that's my fault. I built 3 repositories. As Ignite Samples and Ignite Starter. And I was doing these 3 minutes before going on stage to deliver this whole thing and announcing the project at the end. I was literally typing away as being announced on the thing. And I screwed up. Of course, I screwed up all over the place. The starter one, depending on a tag I'd set in the repo. And I'm an absurd level perfectionist, Leo. It caused a lot of damage to myself. I spotted a typo in the Ignite readme. It was a comma, should have been a full stop, right? So I was like, oh, drat. I deleted the whole repo, fixed that one thing, and pushed up again. Exactly one commit was in there at launch time. No like random type of fixes and stuff. It was clean at launch, basically. But then my starter, depending on a tag, no longer exists anymore, an exact commit that's no longer there anymore because I deleted the whole repo and recreated the whole repo.
Yeah.
And so I screwed up all sorts of different stupid ways. That's fine. Look, I try my best. No one's perfect. So right now, the hardest thing is just getting started because I've got more work to do around getting the starter up. People aren't awake and run a local web server very easily, and so there's no way of trying it out very easily right now. I'll fix that too shortly. There's a bunch of work to do. Once you're going, you're like, oh, this is really fast. One thing I'd like to do, and one thing I did do in the earliest beta, this was back in February when I was just noodling around, was it had SwiftUI previews built in. So as you type your HTML, it re-rendered the page in the preview straight away, which is a very quick way of working. I might bring that back. We will see.
So is that watching your folder as you save it and then rerunning the builder?
No, it's a real SwiftUI preview. So it uses SwiftUI behind the scenes. It renders a local web view.
Got it. Okay.
With the pointing at your temporary output of the build, basically.
Right.
It creates problems because we are running a build of your site takes time to do.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of time, but some time to do. And so it would when you click a link, does the link work or not? And if the link doesn't work, why doesn't it work? And it's complicated. And I have to basically flatten the entire site out every single time, make a small text change. It'd be quite intense. So I yanked it early on. I might bring it back. We'll see how we get on. But that'd be lovely. Be able to see the whole site running in Xcode as you're typing.
That's awesome.
It'll be powerful indeed, I think.
Yeah. Did you try anything with macros by any chance?
Oh, yeah. I thought, oh, this is too easy. I'll make my life harder. Add some macros. No, I did not try any macros. Okay. No.
Yeah.
But I think right now macros are in a strange place in Swift where when you've got a problem, macros are the solution. And like, we survived a long time without macros just fine.
Yeah.
Is there really no way you can solve this without macros? Like Tipkit uses macros everywhere. There's no way that could have been built without macros. Not a single way of doing that macros. So yeah, no macros for me yet.
Yeah. So Tuesday on my live stream, I was dabbling into macros and creating my own just to see what it's like. But yeah, I could see how what you're saying with like Tipkit. Macros were the thing. Macros were like the Swift DSL of last year. It was like the hidden feature like that we had talked about previously that we're going under the hood to, or excuse me, behind curtains that Apple was building for their big reveal of observation and Swift data and stuff like that. And then they use it there. And then, but yeah, it does seem like it's a tool that they want to use everywhere now. Do you, like, is that kind of your perspective? Is that, okay, like, we're going to add Tipkit, let's use macros. We're going to add this new widget to Swift, to Vision Pro, let's use a macro. Is that kind of what you're seeing? Or do you think it has a place in some spots?
Macros right now are not very popular things. As in, like, people will use them at the end user level.
Mm-hmm.
Some folks will make them, but they don't like making them. And I was speaking last week to Katsumi Kishito, who's a Japanese developer who made the Swift AST Explorer, as well as Power Assert and a whole bunch of other stuff. And Katsumi is one of the smartest folks around on macros. He really gets macros at a very deep level, to the point where I think a large number of people would never have been able to make macros at all without the Swift AST Explorer, because it's so helpful explaining what things are happening behind the scenes. And that's because it's built on Swift syntax, which is a very clever framework that makes it almost impossible to do what you want to do with macros. And it makes it almost gives you a machine gun. It says, okay, here you go. Where do you want to point the machine gun? Oh, at your foot. Cool, let's go then.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's very easy to make mistakes with Swift macros, with Swift syntax. And so that's a shame. We should try and make things harder to make mistakes, you know?
I had a really hard time with Swift syntax to the point where at the end I just ended up... Because what you can do now that they introduced is you can basically use a string to create like the variable declaration rather than specifying the whole entire AST tree. And that's what I ended up doing. And I don't like it because like you said, it's so easy for me to make a mistake if I'm just slapping a string in my code rather than using the niceties of Swift syntax.
A little bit, but for me, you can see the problems in Apple's own sample code. Like Doug Greger made a repository of macro examples,
mm-hmm.
and his URL example to do it. And it's a simple thing. Check a URL is valid. So there's no more optional URL nonsense, right? That's all it's nice.
Right.
And his URL example is multiple lines of code of guard this, just trying to get what's inside. When you say URL, hash URL something, in that string inside takes a lot of work. And it shouldn't take a lot of work. And I think Katsumi is interested, and I don't want to speak for him, but I think he's keen to look at ways to make it easier for people who want to make macros that are safe and are correct. And what Apple do and always have done is they make something like Core Text, which is a really powerful, really obtuse framework for using text, but you can do whatever you want with it. And then they say, we know it's hard, but we've made Text Kit over it. And TextKit has all the power in a nice wrapper around. That means you have all the flexibility, all the functionality, but it's now much harder to make mistakes. That's what we need.
Yeah.
We need Swift Syntax Kit.
So I was looking at the point free example that they have for compose architecture or composable architecture. And one of the things they do is kind of what you were saying is like they have to do an extension for this and an extension for that to simplify it. So that way it's a lot easier for them to add the macros that they want for composable architecture, for instance. And I'm like, yeah, that's what you end up having to do, is like creating your own wrapper. Otherwise you have 100 lines of code just to write a few lines of code that are actually correct.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And if you want to go down to the string-based typecast, as force as that, fine. Of course you can do that. Would rather make good macros are correct macros.
I don't like what I have now. It's hard. Like, I'm just like, oh, yeah, this sucks. This is like PHP where you're just like inserting HTML in code inside HTML. And I'm like, I really hate this. But having to deal with Swift syntax is such a headache of, like you said, what Doug had to do with guards and casting and all that stuff that you have to do to check and build the speaking of result builders, that's where a result builder would be great, is like having a result builder that builds the code for you. I wish they had gone that route. So, yeah. That would be awesome.
The other problem, of course, is that people are complaining that Swift syntax is too big and too slow. Because it's huge. It's a complicated library.
Yeah, it is really huge.
And if you're just monkeying around with local code, fine, it's okay. But if you're now running on Bitrise build hours, where it checks out syntax every time, builds from scratch every time through a simple test run, that's actually quite a lot of money now.
Yeah,
and I think of being billed by having to have Swift macros. And so it's landed in an unhappy place. And my concern is, bluntly, that Apple are maybe bored of macros now. Because, well, I don't know how to phrase it really. So Apple have these, they haven't got very many people for a start. Apple underhired dramatically. It's a bit embarrassing how they need to hire people, but that's down them, right? Fine. And so the teams are tiny. The teams are very small indeed. And their goals are massive. They want to do huge things every single year, plus 3 Swift releases a year, whatever it is, right? Every year, big things. And so what happens is usually they do a massive deep dive on something, result builders. And they go wild with result builders for a while. And they're like, okay, it's done now. Bored now, move on. And there's macros. Go wild with macros. Bored now, move on. And they're on to the next thing again and again and again. And right now they're going wild in type safety for concurrency and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is great. But I can't see them return to macros. And saying, oh, you know what? This sucks. Let's make it better. It'll be a while if they do that, I think. If they do return to it, it'll be a while. And that's annoying because people are unhappy.
Yeah. Well put. What else have you been working on, I guess, before we close out?
Well, I've just finished the new 100 Days Swift UI for iOS 17. That took a long time. But to be fair, I released Inferno, Vortex, and Ignite in that time period. 3 gigantic open source projects.
Mm-hmm.
And spoke at multiple 3 or 4 conferences and just had my life as well. It's been a lot of other work in that time. So it was slower than I hoped. It's now end of March. It's finally finished. But it is done now. It's a good thing. Actually, this week, for the first time in a long time, I have no actual work to do. It feels weird.
That's awesome.
Been so dramatically overworked for the last sort of 6 months. My brain's been really full every day, every night, every weekend of things I should be doing now. It's very busy, very important. And I'm like, I have time to stop and think and plan something new. Like, I'm going to do an Inferno release. Inferno version 2 is coming up soon. And I'm looking forward to it. But I have time to actually sit and think about what I'd like to do rather than being, okay, next thing, nonstop. And so I'm looking forward to having a bit of a break. Not a lot. Obviously, Dub coming up soon.
I
booked my flights already, by the way.
I actually have 2 more questions. What tips do you have for developers out there who want to publish an open source Swift package project, for instance? How to get started? What are some things that you learned along the way that you wish you'd learned when you first started publishing open source projects?
I'm a massive open source fan. I love releasing code and usually the MIT license as
That's
open
best.
As I possibly can.
Yeah.
To let folks use as much as they can, which is great. But what I find sometimes is that people put a lot of work into the code and making great code, and then don't document enough to be useful. And I mean, it's usable, of course, but is it useful? Is it actually able to pick it up, try it out, noodle around, and make something with it? And that's surprisingly hard. And so if you look at the Vortex framework or Inferno or whatever, or of course Ignite as well, they're all copiously documented. So many markdown comments in the code explaining what every class, every struct, every method does, but also a web page of example code to work through. You can copy and paste and try things out and understand what's going on, because it helps folks get started. with Vortex making a particle effect. People use it a bunch of times already in their apps because it's so easy to use. Import the project, copy an example code, run it back, it'll just work. And I've gone through an example code of every possible particle system in there. You want to do confetti, you want to do fire, you want to do this, that, the other, boom, example code again and again. There it is. Just start with that. And of course, customize as much as you want to, but start a code. Because once folks are moving, once they've got something to work with, they're away. And I try and encourage folks to think about this in terms of like human language. If you want to learn French or Japanese or whatever, you start somewhere by listening to people speak, and you can mimic them as a kid. You listen to mummy saying something or daddy saying something, say it back to them the same thing they said, and you'll learn and learn. The more you hear, the more you say, and then you make your own things eventually. And this is why view sources in all web browsers, because you can look at how someone solved a problem and steal it and use it in your own stuff. Yeah. It's vitally important to see example stuff before you write your own stuff. And so if someone makes a library, please do. I love seeing more code. But do your best to document it. Get folks moving as easily as possible.
One point I want to make is if you're going to document something, don't document it by breaking it down into its pieces. Nobody wants to know how to conjugate a verb in French. Rather, you want to, you will at some point, but like you said, I like the idea of, okay, repeat, hear a word and say it. And I think what I like what you've done here is with, for instance, Vortex that I'm looking at is like, you have sample code that gets you up and running as soon as possible. Instead of saying, okay, here's the 52 ways effects you can do. It's now, here's how to get started. You want to know more. Here's more documentation on that. I think it's so hard to like, when you work on something all the time, to be able to explain it to someone as if they don't know what you're talking, like from ground one, because you've been, your head's been into it. And that's a really hard talent to have, is to explain something. What is it? Explain like I'm five when you've been in something so much. Does that make sense?
It does. There's actually a language teacher I love very much called Michelle Thomas. And his approach is to teach you a bunch of what he calls keys in a language. And once you know the key to move somewhere, you can start saying what you want to say. For example, in French, it'd say, a good one is, je pense que, I think that. You can say, je pense que, stop, think, whatever, I'm going to go, whatever, home soon or whatever you want to get, catch the train, whatever. But you can say a little bit, stop, unlock the next bit, say a little bit, stop, unlock the next, and work forward. And so giving folks a key to start your project, start with this little thing here, boom, you're away.
I love that.
Is important. It's important.
What are you most excited about or worried about when it comes to WWDC?
So I'll be there the entire week again. I'm flying out Tuesday beforehand this time.
Okay.
And so I'll get over jet lag more or less 5 hours at least by Monday rolling around, which is quite nice.
Yes.
And then I'm there the entire week and I fly back Sunday, because Saturday normally is like a game day with friends and stuff. We play escape rooms and stuff, which is fun. And so I love that part. That's my favorite part by far, is seeing all my Bay Area friends again, all my Apple friends again, and just hanging out, getting coffee and so forth.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to that. That's the best part by a long way. And for folks who don't get to go, there's James Dempsey and the Breakpoints are there. I always have Happy Hour are there. Things happen around Dub. It's not just like Dub or nothing. It's a whole community buzz around the whole week, and I love it. It's just great fun. And I hope this year, in case they're listening, I hope this year that Core Sushi is back. Core Sushi used to be Bill Bumgarner's pre-event sushi thing. A brilliant sushi place in Campbell, I think.
Okay.
Near San Jose. Is it Furugata Sushi? I don't remember. It's been a while. Anyway, and it was a great event to meet people and have a nice time and stuff. It's more people meeting people and hanging out and chatting. That's the best bit by far. Biggest fears, we're going to find out. Every year, is this the year they're finally going to hire a great DevPubs team who do documentation way better than me? Whatever. We'll see.
Wait, why do you want that? Then fewer people will need to go to Hacking with Swift.
That's the biggest fear.
Okay.
It's not a fear. But certainly people come to me for a reason, which is right now they don't get the level of thoughtfulness or care from Apple's documentation they want to see. And they don't get that from ChatGPT either. And so my stuff helps. Here's the code you want. It's checked. It's updated. It's all good. Use that. And folks appreciate that right now. And so maybe this year that'll change. We'll see in 3 months, right?
Yeah. Paul, was there anything else you wanted to mention before we close out?
No, all good.
So I will see you in Kent. Are you coming to Chicago?
Ah. I'm not going to Chicago, no. I'll be in Folkestone, though.
Yeah, okay. What are you speaking on at SwiftCraft this year?
It's a weird thing. I'm not giving a talk this year. I am doing a workshop.
Workshop, okay.
And then that's on Tuesday. And then I'm staying Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and not doing a talk. I'm just hanging around, basically. So we'll see, basically. It's a bit odd.
Okay. I'm really looking forward to that. Paul, I will see you in Kent when I talk about counting and Swift and stuff. So I'm looking forward to that. Where can people find you online?
So on Twitter, I'm Two Straws. On Reddit, I'm Two Straws. On Stack Overflow, I'm Two Straws. On GitHub, I'm Two Straws. On YouTube, I'm Two Straws. Instagram, Two Straws. Basically, Two Straws is how you find me. It's pretty easy to find, I think.
And the website is Hacking with Swift, for those who don't know. Paul, thank you so much for coming on today. It was fantastic to have you on again.
Thank you.
People can find me on Twitter at LeoGDion. My website is BrightDigit. If you're watching this video on YouTube, please subscribe, and I'd love to hear back from you. And if you're watching this on YouTube, if you're listening to this on a podcast player, please post a review. I'd really appreciate it. Thank you so much, folks, for joining me today, and I look forward to talking to you again. Bye, everybody.